Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, Reel 15. We're talking about your time on leave in Tokyo, and apparently you went to a rugby match, and you were saying that the Japanese were trying to build it up.
That's right. The Japanese had taken a yen, pardon the pun, for rugby. And this was a trial match against the Commonwealth forces, and it was a terrific match, actually. It was held in a nice big stadium in Japan, in Tokyo, which I can't remember the name of the stadium. But it was a good match, and the Commonwealth Division won 30-15. But it was painfully obvious that the Commonwealth side were too large and too powerful for the side that the Japs put out. But however, it was very entertaining, and I was sat behind the then Japanese royal family, Prince Chichibu. What was the name of the prince? Him and his wife, Princess Chichibu.
Well, what else did you do?
Went to a couple of nightclubs. And I must confess here, I'd taken about £120 with me, which was a lot of money then. I'd saved hard, for this leave. And this family would not allow me to spend a thing. Took me to a couple of nightclubs. Took me up to a drive up to Mount Fuji, Fujiyama. Another was that they really looked after me, and they gave me a wonderful time. Now, the family had three young girls, so what I managed to do was I managed to get this Japanese driver to take me back to the leave camp, and I managed to buy a lot of goodies for the children, sweets and chocolates and all that, brought it back to them. And all in all, it was a wonderful time. They really looked after me. And then all too soon, as it happens in this case, I was back in the aircraft back to Korea again. Now then, my career then in Korea was coming to an end, because the battalion, from what I can gather, was that before the battalion left Scotland, they were told that when they came out of Korea, their next posting would be to the West Indies. Everybody was absolutely over the moon about this. But somewhere along the line, things went wrong. And the posting was changed to the Suez Canal Zone. Once again, I went, just before the advance party was due to leave, I went and saw the colonel. And I said to him, I'd like to get back to my regiment. This is when he explained to me that he said, no, I said, you're on an overseas tour. He said, you've got to complete this tour, the 3-year tour. But he said, what I'll do is, he said, I'll put you on an advance party for Egypt. And he said, with a view to sending you up to Middle East Land Forces headquarters at Fayed, and you'll be found an extra regimental employment job. Would that suit you? I said, it would suit me fine. Because by this time, I'd felt that there was a bit of a resentment towards me.
In what way?
In the sergeant's mess.
So tell me about that.
Simply because I was a Cameroonian. It was as simple as that. And it all started, I said, with this sergeant major and support company. And I found
that... Now, you haven't told that story on tape. How did you first fall out with him? Because that wasn't on the tape.
Oh, see. Oh. It was just that when I first arrived in support company, when we were virtually setting up base originally, the sergeant major, big, well-made guy, London guy, called Skinner, Les Skinner, he used to scream, if he wanted a sergeant, he used to scream out a sergeant's name. He would stand in the middle of the camp area, and in the distance you would hear, "Yes, sir!" And all the sergeants would shout, And the first time he called my name out, I wasn't all that far away, but I never shouted back. I never responded to his call. So when I eventually, one of the soldiers turned around and said to me, "Hey, Sarge, are you not answering him?" I said, "No." I said, "I don't need to answer him." "Oh," he said, "he expects you to answer him." I said, "No." Well, I said, "I'll answer him in a couple of minutes." So I went up to him, stood to attention, and said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Why didn't you answer me?" I said, well, there's no need to answer me, I'm here. I said, you can tell me what you want now. He said, when I call my sergeant, he says, I expect him to be, you respond to my call. I said, oh, is that right? And I never ever did. And that was me. I'd made an enemy of this guy. He was a bit of a tyrant, really. He used to browbeat everybody, but I refused to be browbeaten. And as a consequence, then there was a bit of bad blood between us. I wasn't all that bothered.
He wasn't the only one, from the sound of it, in the sergeant's mess.
At that time, he was the only one, like, you know. But then once, I noticed that once we got the accommodation sorted out, and we had the sergeant's mess on the top of this hillside, Quonset, a big American Quonset, it's a lovely mess. We got the quartermaster pioneers to come in and decorate it all up, like, you know, and it was really nice. And we had a nice big bar there, and tables and chairs which were scrounged, the usual British Army thing for making themselves comfortable. And then I noticed in the mess eventually there was a bit of snide remarks about Cameroonians and all that, you know. Especially the older members of the Royal Scots that were quite resentful towards me. But it didn't bother me. I just carried on doing my job. And I made one or two friends in there and used to go and just drink with them. And the funny part was, well, it wasn't funny, it was pathetic, really. All these guys that used to shout, sir, yes, sir, were the ones that used to sit around in the same table as the Sergeant Major drinking, like, you know. And on top of the hill above us was an American listening post manned by a top sergeant and about 10 other ranks in the American Army, American Signals. And he was allowed to use our mess. He became an honorary member of the mess. Henry Schotter was his name. I'll never forget, you know, wonderful big man. Henry had fought in the American Air Force during the war. When he came out of the Air Force, he set up a flying school somewhere in the States. And then when the Korean War broke out, he was called up again. He was on the reserve. And he got this job as a Master Sergeant in charge of a listening post. Well, Henry and I became very good friends. Also, I became very good friends. We used to get some American Marines would pop in from time to time. And one of them was a guy from Baltimore, James J. Kennedy, Staff Sergeant in the American Marine Corps, in the 3-5 Marines. Jim and I became really great friends. And he used to come over to our place 1 week, and I would go over to their place another, because the thing was that we were pretty lucky for transport there. I could use the Assault Pioneer Jeep to go over to his place about 10 miles away. I'd spend the weekend there, Saturday and Sunday. And then James J. would come back over to my place and I'd have a spare bed for him. Now, something that used to annoy me was that Skinner disliked Americans intensely for some reason, I don't know. But his mum was probably frightened by an American when she was carrying him. But anyway, he used to make a lot of snide comments, not when they were there, but after they'd leave the mess. And he would make sure that within my hearing, he'd make a snide comment about the Marines. And they were fabulous guys, they were terrific blokes, you know. But so all in all, it wasn't a very happy time there, like, you know.
So you applied for this other posting, and this is...
Applied?
You went with the advance party.
Advance party to Suez.
Now, when was that? Then when would that be? That would be May 1954,
wouldn't it? Yep, that's right, yeah,
then
yeah.
You got there, but yep. So you'd leave. How did you get there? You went with the advance party.
Once again by sea. And the advance party was the same sort of, composed of the same sort of group that left for Korea, under command of a major and sundry other ranks. And once again, I was C Company's rep, represent was part of the C Company representation. And we arrived at Port Suez, way at the other end of the canal from Port Said. We then mounted in transport and went to this camp. Now, the regiment we were taken over from was the Inniskilling, first Battalion Inniskilling Fusiliers, or the Skins as they're known.
Now, what was this camp called?
I honestly can't remember now.
But it's near
Port It was just a big camp, and the Inniskillings were there. And after about a week there, this major sent for me and he said, "Now you're being posted up to headquarters at the Fayed, Middle East Land Force headquarters at Fayed, with a view to getting a job. Is that what you wanted, wasn't it?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "The colonel, he organised this very well." He said, "The transport will take you up to Fayed tomorrow." Next day, I duly arrived at Fayed. Was interviewed by a major, who said he would speak to me the next morning. So when we got there, the next morning when I spoke to him, he said, "Look," he said, "we can either send you to Cyprus or up to Port Said." So he said, "What would you like to do?" Well, by this time things were bubbling up in Cyprus, and I thought, sod this, I'm not going to chance my luck again. So I voted for a job at 156 Transit Camp in Port Fouad. That was just adjacent to Port Said.
So
Port Fouad, Fouad.
And what were your duties at this? It was 156 Transit Camp.
Yeah, that's right. It was a massive big transit camp. And all units, drafts coming in and out of Egypt went through this place. They would stage there, like, you know. And they, first of all, I was put into the quartermaster's department. And I spent about 6 months there. And then the sergeant in charge.
What were you doing in that 6 months?
It was just ordinary quartermaster work, issuing bits and pieces. In fact, it was a very, very cushy job, because you weren't, it's not an ordinary battalion where you were issuing stores and clothing and shoe wear. You issued very, very little stuff, like, you know, just mainly for your permanent staff. So it was quite boring in many ways.
What was your living accommodation like?
Oh, it was brick accommodation, brick building accommodation. I had a room of my own. And then with a lovely big sergeant's mess, a huge big bar room, and dining room, manned by, they weren't Egyptians, they were guys with three big scars on their face. I forget actually where they came from, Somalia or somewhere like that, you know?
Sounds like it.
Yeah, they were cooks, barmen, what have you, sifragis. The men who issued you, waiters in actual fact, used to wear long flowing gowns. If a battalion did come through, if a full regiment did come through, then the waiting staff was supplemented by the battalion staff. They'd get private soldiers in there to help with because the sergeant's mess would get really busy then, like, you know. So I was in that job for about 6 months in the quartermaster's department, and when the...
And how did you take to the conditions of life in Egypt?
You know, I didn't like it at all. I hated Egypt and the Egyptians.
Well, why did you hate it?
Because the Egyptians, they were a nation of crooks. Well, you know, maybe I shouldn't condemn the nation, but the ones we came across, they were trying to pick your pocket, they were trying to steal from you, it was dreadful. And I got this, what they call gypotomy. A lot of people got this. You were continually in a state of, your stomach was continually upset, like, you know. It would ease off for a while and then you get it back again. Pains and sickness and your queasiness in your stomach, like, you know. And I didn't like it at all. The fact was that Port Said and Port Food wasn't a very safe place to socialise, because don't forget there had been a lot of trouble in Egypt prior to us. In fact, we still had to go out, whenever we moved out of the garrison, Port Said garrison, we were armed. If we were going down to the airport, say escorting somebody down to the airport, we were armed. And there was odd occasions where trucks and vehicles were ambushed. So there was still a bit of a state of tension about the place. So we couldn't really get into Port Said or Port Fouad for that very reason. There was still a feeling of anti-British feeling there. However, we were lucky. There was a big camp there, leave camp. I forget what they called it now. They had the terrific entertainment set up there, where chaps from all over the Suez Canal could come up there for a week of 10 days leave, even with their families. They had accommodation with families. And we could go down there. They would have concerts. So this was out with the confines of the town. It was pretty safe for us to go down there. Like, it was only a couple of minutes walk from the transit camp. Anyway, I then, as I said, the social life was pretty good, actually. Especially in our mess, we had one or two dances and social evenings there. Saturday night used to be pretty good. The buffet would be laid on, and there'd be a housey-housey session laid on, and all senior ranks from all around the garrison would come over. The garrison RSM, RSM Taylor of the Ordnance Corps, fantastic big chap, he'd come over with his good lady, and Saturday nights were pretty good. Then I was transferred to the MT section, the MT sergeant, motor transport section, which I knew nothing about, but I learned rapidly. I became quite interested, and I did all the paperwork. I had a secretary as well, an Italian girl, and she was very, very efficient. And I just looked after the MT section, made sure the men's rooms were in good condition, that they were clean and tidy. The men were clean and tidy. We used to do muster parade every morning, and I would check the MT platoon. And the odd morning, the CO would come on parade and decide to check the inspected platoon, like, you know. So I was quite happy then, like, you know, I had something to dig my teeth into. I had a full day's work, virtually, like, you know. And that was it. I spent a lot of time writing home to my wife, my mother.
I was going to ask, did he miss you? Were you lonely, because you hadn't been married long?
I missed my wife very, very much. And she was... What kept her going, actually, was she managed to get a good job. She became a manageress in the new cinema in Newcastle.
Was there any question of her coming out there to join you?
No. This was a terrible thing. That it was on the cards that the British Army was going to pull out of Suez Canal at a certain date. And as a consequence of this, there was only very, very few married families were allowed to go out. Very few wives were allowed to go out. And although I applied for my wife to come out, she was quite prepared to come out, it wasn't allowed. So I spent most of my time, when I wasn't socialising, I was writing long letters to my wife and she to me, like, you know. It was a good grounding for her, actually, because the job she had, it was a position of responsibility. Because later on in life in Germany, she got a good job, and then in Civvy Street, she managed to finish up a tax inspector. So that was a start of a... Although she worked in the dining room in Greghorn Camp, as a kind of skivvy, as it were, she managed to upgrade herself eventually. So that's what I say, I spent a lot of time writing to my...
Much sport?
Sorry?
Much sport?
Very, very limited. I managed to... They had quite a good garrison hockey team, and I managed to play for the... got a trial for the hockey team, and played for the hockey team.
But no boxing?
No, there was no boxing. Oh, but that time I was pretty well over it by then. Like, I used to play nearly every Wednesday and Saturday, boxing, hockey, And see, the thing was, the facilities were very, very limited there, very limited. And apart from that, the other thing was, in the camp itself, the people responsible for the security was a platoon or company of Mauritians, guys from Mauritian Pioneer Corps. And funnily enough, they were commanded by a young Cameroonian, a second lieutenant Grant, who came from Aberdeen, who was a National Service officer. And he was in command of this unit. Now, one night, I'm sitting in the bar, it was only about 3 hours in the bar in the mess, and Second Lieutenant Grant came dashing into the mess. And it was quite a distance from the door up to the bar. I said, "What will it be, sir, you know?" And then I looked at his face and I knew there was something wrong. He said, "Sergeant Clark, can I see you immediately?" He said, "Something terrible has happened." So anyway, I went to him and said, "What's up?" He said, "My sergeant's been murdered." I said, "What?" He said, "My sergeant's down in his tent, sitting at his tent, dead, with a big knife in his back." I'll never forget this guy's name, Sergeant Acklew. So I went down with him, like, you know, and he said to me, "What will I do?" I said, "Oh," I said, "first of all, you get on to the order officer, contact the order officer, who will in turn must contact the garrison order officer." Anyway, apparently what it was, this sergeant, all these Mauritians were all young lads, like, you know, and this sergeant was a bit of a pervert. He was homosexual. And as soon as a draft used to come out from Mauritius, he was there. And apparently he took a terrible notion on one of the young blokes that came out in the latest draft, and had got him in his tent one night and virtually assaulted him a couple of nights before this happened. Because they got the guy that night, in actual fact. They got the Mauritian contingent on parade, and the new the SIB, Special Investigation Branch, managed to pick this guy out straight away. And then he burst forth and told him what had happened, that this sergeant had assaulted him, and it played in his mind. He determined he was going to get the sergeant for what happened, like, you know. And well, the sergeant was apparently actually was sitting writing a letter at his table in his tent, and this young lad crept in with a knife and stuck it in his back. So that was the only exciting thing that happened there, like, of any seriousness.
So you were out there from, well, May 1954, but mm-hmm. You were out there until...
About 2 years, 56.
Till April 56.
Yeah.
Anything else? Nothing else to come to
mind? Nothing else really happened there.
So what's the next move then? How did it come to an end?
What happened then was, I was then sent home I'll tell you what did happen, actually, or what nearly did happen to me. I was put on a flight to fly home from Fayed, RAF Fayed. And the night before the flight, it was cancelled. And I wasn't a very happy man. And the adjutant in this camp was a big bloke called Dave Ambrose, Captain Ambrose, of the Royal Norfolk Regiment. Him and I really became good friends. And Dave Ambrose sent for me that evening and said, "By the way, off parade we were on, first name Terrams." He said, "By the way, Jock," he said, "your flight's been cancelled tomorrow." I said, "What?" He said, "I'm afraid so." He said, "We got a phone call from RAF Movements not too long ago." He said that your flight's cancelled. So I said, "Well, what will I do now?" He said, "Well, I should leave it. You should find out what's happening later on in the morning." So what happened was, a young RAF movements officer in Fayed had taken a whole lot of army bods off this flight and put on a load of RAF types to fly them home. He'd done them a big favour. He did them a favour, all right. The plane crashed in Malta and everybody was killed. They stopped off at Malta for breakfast the next day, and on takeoff the plane crashed and everybody died. So when the word came through about that, Dave Ambrose sent for me He said, "You are a very, very lucky man." And then he told me what happened. So I said, "Well, I'll tell you what to do." I said, "Put me on the next ship. I'll go home by sea." He said, "A very wise move." So it was about another, I was there about another 3 weeks before I managed to get a ship home, which I can't remember the name of it either. But I know it was. We were in cabins by this time. I shared the cabin with three RAF guys, and had a very uneventful journey back home.
So you got back to England, round about April 56.
Yeah. Well, then I went straight on leave. I reported to, there was a transit camp in London. It was an underground. It's been used as an underground. I forget which one it was now. But you booked in there and you were issued with your warrants and all your movements, your posting orders. So when my leave was finished, I was then posted to the depot at Lanark. I think I got about 14 weeks leave or something, I can't remember. Something in that order.
And then you went to the depot?
The depot. I was only there a short while, a couple of weeks or so, and
so you're just awaiting posting there?
That's right, I went and posted, that's right. And then shortly after that I was posted to the depot in Germany, in BUR.